How am I going to live through this? This is the question people ask when they're in the middle of a crisis or a trauma or in a grief that won't seem to find its bottom. It's a question I've heard more than a few times in recent days. It's not always been about the actions of the U.S. president, but almost always it seems to be in there somewhere. There is a collective anxiety and dread that seems to be washing over our country, even now over much of the world, as the campaign promises to turn our backs on a desperate people seeking refuge, or to end an imperfect but better than nothing healthcare law, or to erect a $15 billion wall across mountains and rivers to keep people out, or maybe in. As all of these and more start to move from theory to reality, fear is growing, as is a sense of helplessness. Meanwhile, it's not like all the regular parts of life got themselves figured out. Life continues to be filled in big and small ways with struggle, broken relationships, illness, money troubles, job stress, and strain. The work of simply trying to make a life and become the person you are meant to be. Put it all together and you come to this question, how are we going to live through this? Collectively and historically, as a faith tradition, we have answered this question in one primary way, which is to say, we get busy. Or perhaps it would be more accurate to say, busier. In our Unitarian Universalist faith, as theologian Rebecca Parker puts it, we are the agents of history. We are the creators. We will build a land where we bind up the broken. We will. And this feels good, necessary, justified. That is, until we find ourselves in moments like the one we're currently in. Moments where we've been working hard, we've been efforting and marching and doing all the things, yet still the outlook for justice looks bleak, and even science is considered just somebody's opinion. And we're tired. As Parker says, in these sorts of moments, we come up against our own helplessness. The inability we have to stop loved ones from dying or turn our children from paths of self-destruction or from those we love from breaking our hearts. And we find ourselves asking, is there any source of help beyond my own strength? Is there anything I can trust beyond our power to make it right? Today marks the fourth and last official service in our sermon series exploring, it's been what we've been calling We All Go Together, which is exploring universalism for the 21st century. Although next we turn to a series on courageous love, so that means we'll keep coming back to this theology that could be summed up so well in that song we've been singing these past few Sundays. The one that goes, there is a love holding us. There is a love holding us. There is a love holding all that we There is a love holding all. We rest The Unitarian strand of our faith tells us that we need to get busy, that it's all on us. But the good news of our universalist theology is that there is something bigger holding us, something bigger that we can trust, something that could hold us and heal us that has nothing to do with our effort. As Parker puts it, there is a gift already given to all people, a gift that does not have to be earned, that could never be lost, that could never be taken away. This is grace. And in these times, it feels exactly like the good news we need. Which is why we decided to step back from our usual monthly themes and instead dig into universalism, because we knew we would need to remember there is a love holding us, there is a gift already given, we are already blessed and healed, and it is by resting in this love that we have any hope of remaining awake to all that is broken in our world and not becoming ourselves broken. Yet even as I was working on today's sermon and I was hearing all the latest crazy news, I started to think, this is not the message we need. We need to take action. We need to do more, call more, read more articles, create more outrage, wake ourselves up to the world, this tragedy, this pain. It is on us. The early Christian monk, Augustine of Hippo, he was a great proponent of the idea of grace. He once said that God is always trying to give good things to us, but our hands are too full to receive them. This is one of those things I should put on post-its and place everywhere all around me, because grace is that gift that life keeps trying to give us. But if we're so busy doing all the things in our hands, which is to say our hearts and our lives are filled up, we cannot find our way to grace. There's no room. In place of grace, we just see us and work and all there is to do and all the news articles and the latest thing to be outraged about. But when we pause, when we slow down, when we imagine ourselves not in charge of everything, responsible for everything, but rather as partners with something greater than us all, then things like the National Park Service going rogue appear. Or say, spontaneous mass gatherings happening at airports across the country with chants saying over and over, oh my gosh, it was like an hour of, let them in, let them in, let them in, let them in. And there, too, the lawyers working pro bono on behalf of those detained and the taxi drivers refusing to take anybody to the airport, and then suddenly a judge in New York City agrees, and there's some hope again. All while we all were resting. This is grace. Grace breaks through and we breathe. And we notice the sun did come up again, and we had nothing to do with that. Yet there it is. As Wendell Berry's poem goes, no leaf or grain is filled by work of ours. The field is tilled and left to grace, that we may reap. Great work is done while we're asleep. To our great surprise and delight, we arrive in a room filled with these others who have come to sing, even to surround us in song, to sing of peace, these souls who come still to hope, to figure it out, still not pulling the covers over our heads after all, but feeling called by this possibility of peace, this righteous sense that love connects us, heals us, and holds us, and that somehow we could rest in this love. If the first week of this presidency is any indication, it is a long road ahead. We don't know which way the universe is going to toss us, what ups or downs, and sometimes this is daily, even hourly. So if we're going to make it through, we do need to make space for grace. That is, we need to make space between ourselves and everything and everyone else so that love can keep breaking through. We need to know which part of the work is ours and which is not. We need to know where we stand and what we're willing to do. And we need to know all this from a deep connection to our center, that peace within, that grounding, to live from this place, even as we are engaged with openness to all that comes our way. In our Courageous Love workshop yesterday, we called this practice of having a sense of compassion, openness, but also some boundaries. Although you might just as easily name it using the concept from family systems theory called self-differentiation. Our colleague, the Reverend Jake Morrill, he's a UU minister in Tennessee and a guru when it comes to systems thinking, describes self-differentiation as a matter of three puzzle pieces. They go like this. Number one, take a stand. Number two, keep in touch. And number three, keep cool. Taking a stand, that first one is that part of knowing where you are, what's okay with you, what isn't, and sticking with it. It's the piece of the world that is yours, the piece of the work that is yours. It's discerning and maintaining a great clarity of self, no matter what. No matter which way the universe is tossing, daily, hourly. Keeping in touch, the second part, on the other hand, is about connecting openly with others, individuals, but also, yes, the news, what's going on out there. It is observing and staying awake with a great curiosity and care, including a willingness to consider how or if this information should or could alter your stand that you've taken. The trick, of course, is to not let this second piece destabilize the first, which is where we come to the third practice, keeping cool. Maintaining both one and two is anxiety producing for everyone. Don't worry, you're not alone in that sense of anxiety, of trying to figure out how to balance both of these. It's natural. There's no getting around it. If you're human, trying to figure out how to be differentiated, yet in relationship with other humans, you're going to be anxious. It's just true. So keeping cool is not about no anxiety. It is just about regulating that anxiety, not getting toppled over as a result. I encourage the use of the word fascinating to help with this. As in, that is so fascinating that humans behave like that. I'm going to tell you a secret. I didn't put this in the script because I didn't know if I'd be brave enough to do it, but do you know what the initials WTF stand for? Well, that's fascinating. You should use it. It's very helpful. Because the word fascinating reminds you that you are not them. And yet it still keeps you connected to them because you're paying attention with a curiosity. And even though sometimes the sense of humor helps you to discharge the anxiety, it also does allow you to offer a certain level of connection, a light connection. Well, isn't that fascinating? Especially in a highly anxious time such as today, this can be a great challenge. You may find yourself being touchy about stuff that isn't that big a deal, or being stubborn or overreactive about something you could usually let go of, or trying to solve the whole world by way of adding to your personal to-do list. These are perhaps some indicators of anxiety trying to derail you. And even for ourselves, we can say, isn't that fascinating? I'm reacting like that. There are many things to help when anxiety gets the best of us. Breathing deeply, singing, taking a walk. Still, none of these in-the-moment things will help as much as the practices that we might take up out of the moment. Those regular habits that help us know where we stand and who we are and whose we are and by what and to what we are called. There are many sorts of practices that could help with this, but I want to end my sermon today by focusing in on one particular one that I believe would be transformative and sustaining for all of us as individuals and as a congregation, and would be a radical act of faith, universalist faith, for we who often seek salvation by way of the to-do list, which is the ancient spiritual practice of Sabbath. Now, anyone who knows me even a little bit will realize that here we reach the part of the sermon that's aimed almost entirely at myself. It's okay, it happens sometimes. Over the past few weeks, however, my family has been trying out a mini version of Sabbath. We call it Family Fun Night. It starts whenever I get home on Sunday, and it is completely tech-free, which means no TV, no phones, no screens at all, and all four of us are together, and we do something that we think is fun. One time we played charades. We laughed hysterically. Another time we made paper airplanes and had flight competitions around the whole house. Most recently, we played basketball and went swimming. I confess we are all terrible whiners as we attempt to begin. We're too tired. We're too worried about the text we might miss. That's not me, I swear. Or too lazy to come up with something that doesn't involve a screen. But without fail, every time, once we've given in, it's the best. It reminds us who we are and what really matters. And guess what? The world keeps going on without us. Next up in my Sabbath practice, I want to turn these family fun nights right into Monday rest days. It's something I've been trying for with some partial success these past few years, emphasis on partial. But like with everything else these days, it's time to get serious. It's time to lean into this major premise of our faith. This promise of grace. So I wonder if you would like to try this out with me. One day a week, no tech, or at least no social media. One day a week for rest, remembering and reclaiming who you are, whose you are, and what really matters. Don't get stuck on the particular day. I've heard that Sundays are popular. But like I said, I'm on Mondays. All that matters is that you choose one day, every week, where you can, as Wayne Miller says, rest, where there's no rush to get to the end, because the work is never finished. Take time to fill yourselves up. Listen to the sound the heart makes as it speaks the quiet truth of what is needed. Every other day, we can be the ones doing, marching, writing, reading, calling. Just one day, we make space for grace. Grace to do its healing work on our hearts and in the world. In this turbulent world and in these trying times, let us rest in this faith, our faith, and in this love. Will you sing with me?